Hello and welcome to The Inner Gamer, episode 128. We are your weekly dose of video game news, reviews, opinions, and discussions made for and by our listeners. My name is Brett Yanosky.
I'm Devin Duree.
And I'm Luis Gonzalez.
Today on The Inner Gamer, it's all about some new games we played. Brett plays ARMS, I play some PC games, as well as Luis plays some PC games. We're part of the PC Master Race now.
Yep.
We have our upcoming titles for the next week, as well as some gaming news, including Atari making a new console, Pokemon Go gets an update, and the darkness from Destiny 2, we don't exactly know if it's a thing or was it a thing. No one really knows. And then to round out the end of the episode, we have a very special guest, our dear friend of the podcast, Carolina Rabassa, the voice of
Rabassa. Carolina Rabassa, she's my favorite. Carolina Rabassa.
Well, she's on the podcast, and she's gonna. We're gonna get to know her a little bit more, and she's an amazing person. So, tune in, stick around. It's gonna be a great episode. Brett, please cue the music.
Cue it now.
Welcome to the Inner Gamer.
Hello, everybody. It is June 27, 2017. Welcome to the Inner Gamer Podcast. If you like what you hear, please be sure and help donate the show on Patreon. Head over to theinnergamer.net and click the donate button to contribute. Now, we're going to talk about some video games. I played a new game that has been highly anticipated on the Nintendo Switch. It is called ARMS.
That was the best intro you've ever done.
Oh, ARMS. Thanks, man.
I actually think it's pronounced ARMS because it's all capitalization.
I have to say, it's got one of the best, most addicting soundtracks ever.
Yeah.
There's a song in it. There aren't really any words to it, but I just, when I'm in there, I'm just bouncing like the characters in the game because they bounce every time you like pull them up. They're just animated and they bounce all the time. And I just want to bounce and jump around and dance like they do. But, anyway, ARMS is out. It is a full price title. It is a first party Nintendo Switch game. It is $59.99. This is a fighting game. And first and foremost, this is most closely associated to me to games like Mortal Kombat and Injustice and Street Fighter. And it's in that fighter genre. It totally matches up with that.
Yeah.
But it's a complete new twist on that genre, which makes it interesting and innovative for sure in that sense. It uses the motion controls of the Joy-Cons. So when you put your two Joy-Cons in your hands, you hold them like the your thumbs are touching the top buttons on the thumbstick, and you clutch it that way. So you're holding it like sideways. Like normally you hold it where you have your fingers on the joysticks and the buttons on the front, but instead mm-hmm. you want your thumbs on the top of it and hold it like
with the controller with the joysticks facing inward to one another. Yeah. And you're holding it sideways.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And the right bumper is your jump. The left bumper is the dash. So you can like dash really quick, left, right, forward, whatever direction you're moving. And you rotate your arms, physical arms, in order to move your body back and forth. And each arm has different arms or weapons you can attach to it. So you have three options per side, and each character has three of them. So you can decide, okay, I want this arm to have this big, huge reach out hammer thing. That's a really slow attack. But when you punch, it like throws out a hammer and drops it onto the person and hits them in the head, which is a really cool, awesome thing. And then other arms will have like rockets that it shoots out and like homes in on the enemy to attack them. So it's like different weapons per arm, which is really cool. And each one's an arena style level. So it's, you know, it's pretty standard, small little level. There's eight of them, I believe. There's eight levels. And it's just fast fighting battles. So they have different game modes. They have 1v1 where you can fight against another character, a computer, or you can have up to four players connected at the same time on your local console. So if you have, you have to have two Joy-Cons per person. So if you have, you know, that many Joy-Cons on your person, which most people, if you have a friend come over, they'll have two sets of Joy-Cons with them or whatever. You can have four players in the same room playing couch co-op, fighting each other. You can do teams, so two on two, or you can do one versus one versus one versus one. And then they have some other like party style game modes. They have one called volleyball where there's a ball that drops out and you use your arms to like punch the ball to the other side and basically spike it into the enemy's area and hit it the ground, and then it blows up and you win that round. And then they have basketball where you shoot hoops. And then they have one called, I think it's called Shootout, where you're basically shooting at targets and whoever gets the most points wins. And then there's a ranked mode. So that's ARMS.
How do you like it so far, like with the party atmosphere and playing with multiple people?
Yeah. So with multiple people, it's a lot of fun. It's right. Very fast-paced. It's very colorful. A lot going on the screen. The gameplay is exciting. I mean, like my actual arms are actually sore right now because I was swinging so much, like getting really into it when I was playing yesterday.
Yeah.
And that part's really cool. The thing that I dislike about this game is that for a full-price game, it's a fun party game, but it's not a fun, deep game. There's not a story to it. There's no story mode. There's like some dialogue options when you're playing. They have this thing called, I think it's called the Grand Prix or something like that, but you play 10 characters and then you just fight until you die, essentially, kind of like in Street Fighter. And that has a little bit of dialogue to showcase who these characters are, but there's no actual story mode to this game. So you're basically just jumping in and having fights online or local. So if you like the mechanics, it's really awesome, but it's not something I'm going to sit there for like 5 or 6 hours at a time and play against somebody. Like I'll jump in for like 3 or 4 matches and then I'm done. So for $60, there's not as much there
steep.
As I feel there should be. Yeah. It's very interesting. But I mean, the art style is awesome. The character design is fantastic. I mean, it definitely is kind of a little akin to Overwatch, except even more outlandish. Very Nintendo, for sure. You have that Nintendo feel.
Like how it's all these different characters who have been maimed in some way to have their arms ripped off and then have crazy banana rockets and bungee cords and shit just shoved into their torso.
There's one guy that looks like Gumby, except like a gel version of Gumby, and he's a force to be reckoned with. He's so hard to play or play against, but as a character, he's really, really good. So, I mean, it's a fun game, but for me, it's a delay just because it doesn't have enough. There's just not enough to do long term to get me excited for that price point. So I think if it drops down like $40 or something like that, it's definitely worth buying. $30, $40, it's worth it. I think at that point, it's more worth it than Street Fighter is. But as a $60 game, it's not as worth it.
Yeah, I can understand that. I don't really know. There's really almost zero appeal for me for ARMS just because I'm not really a fighting game person. Like my fighting game is Soul Calibur. That shit is so tight. But that's it. Like that's all I play. Like, that's the only fighting game I really do. I enjoyed Street Fighter for a while. I don't really like Injustice all that much. Although, I enjoyed it when I played Gods Among Us when it was free that one time. But ARMS for 60, I understand why it's 60 because it's AAA and it's like a big new IP.
Yeah.
But until they add, like, think about Street Fighter V. They didn't have a story mode when it released 2 years ago.
Right.
And everyone was mad because it just felt so rushed. I don't think this feels rushed. I just think it's a very particular thing to make a mechanic in a game.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredibly polished, and it's going to be a great game. Like, I mean, I remember, Louise, whenever the Switch came out, you were talking about 1-2 Switch, and you said that was a really cool, like, party game. But, like, are you still playing the 1-2 Switch at all, or have you kind of given up on that one?
Oh, no, I turned that shit in, man.
Yeah, yeah. So like,
I turned that in.
That game,
I found out I could get, like, $30 back for it. So I'm like, dude, totally.
So that game was full price, wasn't it? It was like $60 or something like that.
Yeah, that was stupid shit.
Yeah, and so this one makes more sense to me, like to purchase and play with your friends. Like, I mean, we had a blast playing it, but after an hour and a half, we're like, screw this, let's play Mario Kart. And then we jumped in and played Mario Kart for like 2 hours.
Yeah.
So Mario Kart has that appeal, has that longevity appeal, but this one just didn't have that. But I mean, negatives aside, it's still worth playing. It's still worth getting, but I would wait till it goes on sale to a cheaper price. So
the good news with this game is it has a lot of potential for good DLC, like free downloads, which they didn't announce DLC. But think about all the cool things you can add. Like, you could technically add tennis. You could add like ping pong.
Oh, yeah.
You could change perspectives. You could probably have something to do where the arena is no longer flat, but a circle, kind of like a blitzball or something like that. but you don't swim. Like, you're just kind of like moving around, and maybe it's just like a 360 ping pong or something like that. Like, things like that would be really cool. But
now, I didn't mention that, but there is one map in there that's kind of innovative in the sense that you're in this circular arena, and there's these little floating discs in the map. And if you're on the lower part of the map, it's really hard to hit somebody. But if you're on one of those discs, those discs move around on the field automatically. So you just stand there and just hit people. So it's kind of like if you're both on a disc, you can attack each other. But if you get knocked off of that disc, then it makes it harder to attack the enemy. So that kind of innovative twist to making the environment part of the game was cool. There just needs to be more of that. Like, there's not enough levels, I don't think. Once they add more, there's a lot of room to add new levels, new characters, and stuff like that. So hopefully, as time goes on, they add free content. That would make the price point worth it for me, the more they add to it. So, yeah. So you guys,
understood, fellas,
have been playing PC. You guys both have PCs.
We both have PCs.
The Steam sale is going on right now. It's in full force, the Steam summer sale. Tell me, how has the experience been on PC?
It's being greeted by an old friend. I know we talked about this before we started recording, but my last PC I got was back when Warcraft 3 was out. That was like my last big PC that I achieved. So it's been a while. But I have loved every second of it so far. I got my first initial purchases was, I was like, I'm going to get a title that I know I'm going to enjoy and be able to sink a whole shitload of hours into. Then I'm going to get some nostalgia titles, and then I'm going to build up a Steam library and put it all in my cart, and then I'm going to buy all this shit at once and then hopefully play that until my eyes bleed.
That's my sentiment exactly. My wish list is 37 titles long.
I used to have that long.
I'm looking at it right now.
List.
Like, they're all amazing titles that I just haven't had the opportunity. I'm going to really quickly run through it. I'm super fast reader. Ready?
Yeah. Go.
Left 4 Dead 2, Portal 2, Tomb Raider, Prison Architect, Poly Bridge, Hollow Knight, Portal, Hotline Miami 1 and 2, Axiom Verge, Oxygen Not Included, Jet Set Radio, Flint Hook, Fallout New Vegas, which is $2.50, by the way. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Left 4 Dead, Pony Island, Middle Earth, Shadow of Mordor, $4. That's the most amazing sale of that game I've ever heard of. Torchlight 2, Golf with Your Friends, which you should get because it's really fun. CSGO, and then a bunch of other ridiculous shit. That's actually longer than 37. Oh, my God. And then Undertale's the last one.
Dude, I have all of those games I think that you named off already.
Exactly.
I was playing Undertale
saying.
Last night. I got Torchlight. I got Transistor. I bought Shadows of Mordor. And then I bought, Hollow Knight. I bought that, all of that except for Undertale, I just bought at the Steam sale. And it was like $30 for all of it.
It's crazy.
It was so cool.
You should definitely play Transistor first. You would really, really, like, if you enjoy the soundtrack for ARMS and you like kind of, like not EDM stuff, that's kind of weird to say, but Transistor is amazing. Like, the environment and the gameplay is, it's really freaking hard, but.
Transistor was the ones that made Bastion, right?
Yeah, Bastion.
Okay.
It's the same perspective, but
I like
my
Bastion
God,
a lot. I played a lot of Bastion. I didn't finish
Bastion is more action oriented. This one's more strategy.
Okay, damn it.
This one's more directly related to what the new. Well, think about this. Pyre is their new game.
Yes,
that one is going to be a mix of Bastion and Transistor.
I'm
and
so excited.
They take
for that.
The strategy elements of that and then they mix it with Bastion. But you will really enjoy Transistor. It is one of my favorite games that I've. It's probably like my top 15 games.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I'm enjoying my PC as well. Steam sale is very intimidating, scary, but super cool.
Yeah.
And as a new PC owner, I can't wait to jump into all the games that people have been talking about for years.
Yeah.
Well, I'm excited. I wish I had more. I was going to play. I started playing Undertale last night. I played about 5 minutes of it. And then my friend was like, dude, we got to play PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds. Fine. And then we played for like 3 hours.
Yeah, I'm sure he really had to twist your arm for that one.
Oh, he twisted it so not. It was
that game's so
good.
Stupid addicting.
Yeah. It's crazy because, I mean, it's so buggy for me. Like, I have so many issues. Like, I have to press F like 5 times to get in the car sometimes. And then just I'll shoot at a guy and think I hit him and I don't. But I love that addiction. It's like crack. Like, you want to get in there and just find the best loot, get that 8x scope, take out the bad guys, and wreak havoc.
I have been playing one of my old favorites from way back when, Heroes of Might and Magic 3.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
You digging it? Again?
Oh, absolutely. Like, it's just funny to me, like, stepping into an old game that you haven't played in forever, really.
Yeah.
And then going back to it, I forget how freaking hard it is. Then when I found it on Good Old Games, it was like $3.95 or something like that. So I was like, huh, that cheap, huh?
I love hearing you guys talk about these websites that I've been on forever. And now
we are.
It's taken 127 episodes, 28 now, but we've made it.
We've made it.
You've been converted. Sorry.
Whatever.
That was my evil laugh. But no, that's really cool. I'm excited to just see what you guys find, because there's so many cool gems on there. Like, I was... I want to get back into Factorio. I bought Factorio last year's Steam sale, and that's like a cool strategy factory building game. And then there's Offworld Trading Company that was really popular last year that I've been really excited about. And I mean, Hollow Knight's supposed to be an amazing, amazing game, and that's a game that's probably eventually going to come to the Switch. And as I'm assuming, Undertale probably will as well. So that's what's really cool too, is that these games that you've only known on PC, they found a new home on the Switch. So we'll see that kind of happening as time goes on, which is really good. So I'm excited. Good for you guys.
Yeah, man.
Pretty cool.
I'm glad we're finally in it. Entrenched. We are entrenched in it.
Entrenched indeed. Well, we're going to take a quick break here, and we're going to talk about some video game news and upcoming releases for next week. So stay tuned, stick around. We'll be back here in a moment.
You're listening to The Inner Gamer.
Welcome back, everybody, to our game segments, our new segment, actually, video game releases. I know
you had a great intro and then just a shit one.
It was just terrible. But anyway, we got some video game releases coming out. It's been pretty slow as of late. Just
summer slog, man. I mean, summer slog.
Yeah, summer slog, E3, all that stuff. But we do have one exciting game coming out, and then one exciting DLC coming out. So first up, June 30th, Crash Bandicoot Insane Trilogy is coming to the PlayStation 4. This is a remastering of the three games that started it all. You get Crash Bandicoot, Crash Bandicoot 2, Cortex Strikes Back, and Crash Bandicoot Warped. Relive all your moments in fully remastered HD graphical glory.
It's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
It's going to be amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
It still blows my mind. This was Naughty Dog that made this originally. I had no idea.
Yeah.
And it's just crazy. But I used to play a lot of that.
And apparently it's not just a remaster either. Apparently they just completely remade the whole game. Like, think about the code from back then. They had to completely redo it.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Like, collision detection, all that kind of stuff. So I'm excited. I don't know if it's going to be something I pick up because of the fact that I have my PC. But the second that I see it on sale, or if I find a lull, dude, so down. And apparently Warped is the best one, which makes sense because it's the later one.
Right.
Either way, no Crash Team Racing. That kind of makes me mad.
Crash Team Racing. I used to see that all the time, but I never actually picked it up. But
dude, I want Diddy Kong Racing so bad.
Oh,
Diddy
man.
Diddy Kong Racing was so good, but I don't think that can happen.
No.
One day, maybe.
You never know. I mean, we got Mario plus Rabbids Kingdom Battle, so the world is your oyster.
Hey, honestly, don't talk shit, bro. That game's
amazing. No, I'm not talking shit. I was saying, like, that mash, you know, like...
Well, it's not the MASH anymore. It's the fact that Rare is no longer partnered with Nintendo, so they can't use Diddy Kong or any of those guys. I mean, they can still use Banjo, but they can't use Diddy, which was the whole...
That's true.
The draw.
...thing. That was, well, not really the draw, but that was the namesake, you know? Like, they could just say like something like Rare Team Racing or something, and then have everybody except Diddy Kong.
And then pretty much the entire studio is working on Sea of Thieves right now, so...
That's true.
That too.
It's very true.
They're busy.
But on June 30th, we're also getting a DLC for the only game currently being considered as the game of the year because it's amazing. And seriously, if any other game wins it, I'm going to be flabbergasted. Breath of the Wild's first DLC comes out this Friday. And is it this Friday? Yeah, it is this Friday.
Yep.
This Friday. It's the one that's going to introduce a couple of things, or a handful of things. Trial of the Sword, Hero's Path mode, Hard mode, and then it's going to add in a couple of other things. More armor, more masks, and this really nifty tool. But we'll start first with Trial of the Sword. Trial of the Sword is basically Horde mode for Legend of Zelda.
That's interesting.
Prize at the and the prize at the end is extremely extremely worth it. So you walk to a certain area. You are stripped of all your armor and gear. You start with a stick, and you have to fight through 45 waves of enemies. And when you do, your Master Sword... So I don't know if you've played Breath of the Wild to the point yet where you get the Master Sword, but the Master Sword, just like every other weapon, it breaks, but not actually breaks. It just runs out of power. So if you clear this trial, the Master Sword will no longer run out of power.
Oh,
that's one
man.
Cool prize at the end of it, but
45 waves.
That's crazy.
I wonder how long that takes.
Starting with a stick.
Somebody's going to speedrun that shit.
It's going to be awesome. They're also adding something called the Hero's Path mode, which basically looks at your last 200 hours of gameplay and displays where you've been across the world. So it's just like a map that shows you walk from here to here, you jump from here to here. So you kind of know more or less where you have and haven't been.
That's kind of cool.
So if you were to, I'm probably going to restart in hard mode. And when I do that, I'm going to be able to see where the hell I've been. Although I don't anticipate playing 200 hours unless I get every seed. This is also going to be very helpful for speedrunners so they know what optimal paths there are without tracing them themselves. And then, of course, hard mode. Enemies gain their health back. They're all leveled up. And there's also a bunch of cool new items hanging around. And the overall maximum level of enemies has been raised. So
New game plus!
Yeah, basically. And it's kind of exciting. Last thing. Well, not really last thing, but there's a new item. So have you played Ocarina of Time?
Yeah.
Faroe's Wind? Yes.
What? No.
Well, you know how the fact that you can transfer. Like, you know how you can just drop it and then you can use it again and then you teleport back? Now they're going to have this thing called a travel medallion where you kind of put an insignia on the floor and then you can jump right back to that spot as opposed to having to jump to a tower and then fly down there again, which can be a bit time consuming. So the addition of this will be very welcome for people like myself who like to get to certain locations and then jump right back to them, which is sometimes difficult because of the towers and being able to fly down to stuff. But last thing is armors and masks. So they're going to add Majora's Mask, Midna's Helmet, so from Twilight Princess, Phantom Armor from Phantom Hourglass, Tingle, the fucking dude in the balloons, he's going to be there. There's going to be a Korok Mask that also helps you find all the Koroks, which is huge because there's 900 of them and they're super hard to find. And then there's going to be a few other themed armor sets as well. And this is, again, only one of DLC of two. The second one's going to add in some new story beats and probably some more armor and stuff like that. But I'm excited, man. I'm about to beat the game, finally.
That's awesome. Well, that's what's coming out next week. We got some Zelda stuff. We got some Crash Bandicoot stuff, both new and old stuff. It's gonna be pretty good. Let's jump into our gaming news this week. We have some news that's left over from post E3, and it's kind of big. We're going to talk about it last week, but I forgot to add it into the list, so we're going to talk about it this week. But Atari came out and said that they are back in the hardware business, working on a brand new console. This is the first time that they've been making a console since 1993, which was the Jaguar. And they say that it is a brand new Atari product that's been years in the making. And the teaser video that they have put onto the website ataribox.com shows what seems to be a retro-ish looking console with wood veneer, just like the Atari 2600, which is their first console. However, we don't know anything else beyond that. So there's speculation of what will this be? Will it be competing against the PlayStation and Xboxes of the world? Will it find somewhere in between? Will it be going back to retro games? I don't know.
This kind of came out of nowhere.
It did. I haven't heard much about Atari in general until, bam, we're doing a new console.
And like you think about, you know, early back in Nintendo and Super Nintendo, hell, even a little bit into the PlayStation with the titles that Atari used to have. And as you and I have kind of talked about, Brett, it's like most of the IP is kind of dead.
Yeah.
Or has been dead for a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's like, what's going to happen? Are you just going to come out into the market with a new console with a whole lot of new IP? Like, that's...
I mean, they have
Do they have the money for that?
Well, they used to. I mean, there was a point because I was really... There was a game that they published a while back, which the article that I'm playing with the idea of talks about referencing this game, but it was a game called Test Drive Unlimited that came out way back when.
Oh, yeah.
Like an open world racing game.
Yeah.
And it had such a good concept, but they just... It was the wrong time when it came out. And I want to see something like that come back again. But that was the last game that I know of having an Atari name attached to it. And I mean, there's been other games, I'm sure, but like nothing that's been in the major limelight. And then after that came out, like they had some major financial issues and just struggled a lot. And I don't know what it was that happened that caused them to struggle so much. I mean, obviously, they just haven't been bringing out any new games, but maybe this is what they need, but I don't know what this will be. I think it'd be interesting to see like a retro console that brings back some old games, but also has new games on it, but I don't think they would do that.
I would doubt that it would be a retro console or a just solely to revive old retro games on it. I mean, yeah, we all get a pretty big randy one for nostalgia, but that's really like an on the nose kind of like cash grab, in my opinion, if they were trying to do something like that. I would be surprised if that's the route they went. This feels like they're trying to go for something new, which is shocking.
Oh yeah, very shocking. So anyway, stay tuned for news on that. And we'll update as we find out more information. But let's jump into the game that we were talking about a little bit earlier, PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds. It is insanely popular, and it has just passed 4 million copies sold.
That is freaking insane.
Yes.
Yeah, congrats on that. That's huge.
Very huge. And not only is it 4 million copies sold, and this is up from just 3 million a few weeks before that, back at the beginning of June. So it's been increasing like wildfire. Not only has it done that, but it's gained a huge following on streaming services, being the fourth most, or attracting the fourth most active players on Steam behind Dota, Counter-Strike Global Offensive, and Payday 2. So it is insanely popular with active users playing it all the time. So that's a good sign for them. And as we heard back at E3, they're going to be adding new updates where you can climb over stuff, which is awesome. And then you're going to have more weather effects, and they're bringing it to the Xbox One. So
I'm excited to pick this game up finally.
Yeah. Yeah. You're going to just be prepared for bugs. It is a buggy game, but it shows that buggy games can still be successful, which is awesome. And this one is one of those games that is very successful. So if you guys haven't played it yet, it is definitely worth picking up. Steam sales going on. Oh, it wasn't on sale on Steam. Where'd you guys get it on sale? Louise, where'd you buy it?
So I started my Green Man Gaming account, and they've been just sending me codes from time to time, and they sent me a 33% off one, so I got it for like $20.
Heck yeah. That's awesome. So this next article here is interesting to me. Pokemon Go has a big update coming out. We haven't talked about Pokemon Go in a while, but I wanted to mention this because it's actually really big.
People are playing it again. I've seen no less than about 10 to 15 of my friends who are playing it again.
I was sitting down with some buddies yesterday that don't play video games. They're not big. I mean, they have the 64 still that they play, but that's like the extent of their gaming experience. But they said that they just spent time doing raid battles, which is one of the things that came to the new Pokemon Go update. So with the new Pokemon Go, we have raids where you can get legendary Pokemon, and they've added a bunch of new stuff to it, including gym badges. They have a new motivation system in the game. They've added push notifications for the gyms. They have a lot of new items that are available by completing raid battles. You can now search for your Pokemon. You can see visual indicators to see where there are Pokestops you haven't been to yet. So like a bunch of huge updates came out with it, but the biggest thing is the raid battles. And apparently they're pretty fun, but they've done a lot to the gyms to entice people to like fight at gyms and then participate in these raids. And there's no PvP yet, but it is a cooperative kind of experience with your teams and stuff. So that's kind of cool. I mean, the fact that it had this really huge jump at the beginning and then it kind of died off for a little bit.
Right.
And then now it's picking back up again. I mean, they're keeping it strong. They're keeping it updated. So
keeping users, that's really where the impressive part is.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not to the sheer wave of people that were when it first released, like, you know, a wave of people running in Central Park to go pick up a legendary Lefuckymon. I don't know the name of them.
Yeah.
But it's it's still going, man.
I forget that you never played Pokemon. It just every time it's so funny.
Is it funny?
No, I mean it's probably smart, honestly, because I mean that took a lot of people's lives.
Yeah, I'm good.
But the next Pokemon that comes out on the Switch, you need to buy it because you're gonna get addicted.
Do I?
Yeah.
Do I?
They're making one. It's okay. Gonna be awesome. You should check it out. So if you guys listened to the last podcast, episode 127, you heard my thoughts on playing Call of Duty World War II. And more information has come out about what they are bringing to multiplayer. And they are doing a lot of changes to the multiplayer of World War II. One of the things that they have detailed more is headquarters, which is their social space akin to the tower in Destiny, where you can log in and be part of this social space as you're trying to join a game, and you can try out new weapons, aim with your guns in the firing range, challenge players to 1v1 duels, and just basically interact with players in this big, huge, like boot camp kind of social area. And it supports up to 48 players at a time hanging out waiting for a match to start. So anybody that plays Battlegrounds will know how this works. With the first like minute before you load in a game, you're like connected with all 100 players in the same space. Well, this is what they're doing here a little bit, but with 48 players at a time before you join into a server.
Interesting.
And then they talk about the objective-based warfare, which, again, go back to last week's podcast. You can hear me talk about their war mode, which is a push and pull defensive, offensive kind of battle system, objective-based game mode that is really, really cool, really interesting, really well designed, and I can't wait to play that. But with that, you'll be able to, I mean, it's a totally different experience on Call of Duty.
It really feels like I feel like I'm really eating my own words with this because I mean, I really did give the World War II, they were like, we're going to go back to our roots, and I really harped on that, but I gotta give it to them. This looks like a lot of fun.
Yeah,
I'm really looking forward to Call of Duty multiplayer again.
Yeah, it's really weird. It's strange talking in a positive manner about this game a little bit, but it's cool. They also mentioned loadout changes. They don't have the creative class as it existed before, but instead in this game, you're going to enlist into divisions. And from my understanding is when you enlist in a division, you are part of that division, which is going to be weird and interesting to see how that plays out in the actual game itself, because each division has its own kind of set of weaponry that it can use. So if you're infantry, you use assault rifles. If you're airborne, you use a submachine gun. So kind of like when you pick classes in Battlefield, you assign yourself to a certain type of weapon type and accessories, and then you have a leveling up system within that division. So to me, that's going to be, I mean, you're going to jump into your kind of skill set that you're akin to, because you have people out there that like they're all about sniping, they're all about machine guns, they're all about
there's the running guns stuff. there's the heavy weapon guys.
So basically, like, whatever you dedicate yourself to, like, that's what you're gonna excel more at. But if you don't level up one of the other divisions, then you're not going to get anything from that. So you'll have different types of players that you connect to, which I don't know what they're going to do beyond that, but that's interesting that it's not like just here's everything, figure out whatever you want to build. They're segmenting the player base to confine themselves to different divisions.
Yeah.
So I don't know. We'll see how that works. And then they're getting rid of Kill Cam, and they're adding in play of the game, like in Overwatch, which is interesting. So rather than showing
how many other
the last battle,
how many other shooters are going to copy Overwatch?
Oh, I know. Yeah, it's so funny. Overwatch has really changed the game. Get it? They changed the game.
Shut the fuck up.
I know. It's awesome. But that's a little bit about Call of Duty World War II. It is coming out in November, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, November.
Yeah. And there will be a beta coming out this summer. So, or actually, private multiplayer beta, August, on PS4. And then a second beta will be September 1st through 4th for PS4 and Xbox One.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So, next up, we have a pretty funny and yet at the same time enraging article. So any of you who played the original Destiny, remember the ever-present threat that was known as the darkness.
The
darkness.
Darkness
is creeping in. We must fight back the darkness. But we never knew what it was. All we knew was that it had corrupted all these other alien species. It had created the entire creepy race of the Hive. It had almost completely dismantled the Traveler. And we always wondered, what is it? What is the darkness? We thought this was a mystery that wasn't going to be solved for years. Well, the reason it wasn't going to get solved for years was because Bungie didn't know what the fuck it was. Literally.
Yeah.
In an interview, they admitted they're not addressing the darkness in the second Destiny and Destiny 2 because
I don't know.
We don't know what it is. We don't know.
It's so crazy.
How does that happen?
I know. Like we all assume that, but a game of this caliber and a team of this caliber, how does this just you put in this thing that's such a big part of the game, and then you're like, yeah, I don't know.
Literally, it was such a focus. It was such a hit-on piece of when Dinklebot was still a thing.
Yeah.
It was like so much of like the first portions of the game before you get to raids, when you get to just the normal mission-based quest stuff that you had. There was all this narration about the darkness. And when you actually read the Grimoire cards, there was all these stories about the darkness and what it did and how it affected all the different other alien species out there. Whatever. Nothing. We don't know. We don't know what the fuck it is.
We have no idea. Yeah, it's interesting. And this harkens back to like the issues they had developing the story from the first game. Like, I'm sure they had some ideas about that, but I don't know exactly why they didn't strip that out. I guess they just ran out of time. They were like, well, we have it here. We don't know what to do with it. Let's just put it in there and hopefully we can have some magic happen and fix it later on. And they realized they couldn't fix it. So rather than trying to make up something to get it working, they just said, screw it.
Yeah, they literally just kind of like, whatever, we'll fix it later.
Yeah.
Which I just don't understand.
I don't either. It's awful. But that's okay. Anyway.
And our last story of the day, guys, Rocket League is exploding, as we all know. They recently announced that the Switch is going to be getting Rocket League sometime in the December area, which that'll be the third time I buy Rocket League because I'm going to buy it on PC today
so
and continue
funny.
To play it. And Jeremy Dunham, former IGN editor, is one of the VPs over there, and a lot of discussions about this whole cross-console play now that Minecraft also has it, and Rocket League announced that you can play with PC, Xbox, and Switch players. Jeremy Dunham was basically in an interview with, I don't think it was Engadget, it was with someone in particular, where the discussion of cross-console platform play was kind of brought up and what that means for games that exist on consoles and on PC. And the idea of games dying because networks go out was brought up. And think about a game like Rocket League that exists on PlayStation 4. When the PS5 inevitably comes out, what happens to all those players who were playing on PlayStation but now can no longer play because the networks are closed off. Things like that, discussions like that were happening with Jeremy, and he basically brought up the fact that PlayStation is not allowing cross-console platform play is not good for games like Rocket League or games like, I don't know, I can't even think of any other cross-console games like this. Like, there really aren't any, but it prevents experiences like that. Like, think about games like Killing Floor that are also on PC and PlayStation. Like, those games can't exist without cross-console platform play.
Right.
And the idea that Rocket League would potentially die if cross-console platform play never really became a thing, or in the least, just not exist for a few extra years, that kind of stinks. So this interview is just basically a discussion about these things, and I kind of want PlayStation to just say fuck it and go for it, at least in some of these games. I understand why they don't, but what do you guys think?
I don't know why. I mean, as you just said, you know why, but I still don't understand it. Like, there's such a big demand now for cross-platform play that I don't understand why these people are still holding out. I don't get it. Just do it. We all want it. We'd all be happier for it. Just do it.
Yeah, I think, I know that, like, for PlayStation, they haven't mentioned, like, directly, but they said that I think their philosophy behind it is that they don't want to make it to where you're not going to buy this platform because you can get this one. So, like, by having these things solely on their system only, then it doesn't make it to where it doesn't matter where you buy it. Wherever you buy it, you can play with everybody. They want to force it for people to play on their own platform itself. I don't know if that's necessarily accurate, yep. But I know that's one of basically the issues. Yeah. And I know it's also probably a little more, I mean, it's definitely more difficult to get them to talk to each other because they're different systems, and the way that the networks are designed and stuff like that are probably a little bit different. But for games like Rocket League here, and then we know that Minecraft had it added in, it makes a lot of sense because it just, I mean, like this guy, like Jeremy Dunham said in this article, he mentioned that they don't want to do a Rocket League 2 or 3 or 4. They want to have Rocket League. And like, this is going to be like an everlasting game that just goes on forever, which I think is really smart. And I think that's a lot of, I wouldn't be surprised that that's something that Overwatch does as time goes on. And they should theoretically not necessarily open up PC to Xbox, but like, that could be a Xbox to PS4 crossplay kind of thing. I think that would be a smart way to do it because, I mean, just you have everybody on the consoles playing with everybody, which would be cool. But I think this is the right move for Rocket League, and I think they're going to set a standard for other people to kind of use this as an example of, okay, this works, this makes sense, we can make our game last a lot longer if we do it this way. And yeah, I think it's a smart move, and I'm excited.
Yeah, I think eventually it might happen, but the issue now, and again, from the PlayStation side, it just makes so much sense. Unfortunately, that means the gamer can't play with everybody else. But then what do you start to differentiate yourself on? Like, who was Phil Spencer was talking about, he doesn't like console exclusivity either. Like, why not bring it to everything?
Yeah.
Like, 'cause that's the whole point of business. Like, that's just how you do things. Like, exclusives have existed forever, and we're not going to move in a direction that doesn't allow for that. Like, yeah, PC exists and you can play on every PC, but that's just about it. Like, it just doesn't make any sense. A lot of times exclusivity is also what makes these developers money too, because they're like, all right, we're going to pay you this, so you bring it to us only. And even then, like, the offsetting costs or the offsetting revenues, I guess, may not even be worth it. Plus, there are two different architectures and there's a lot to consider. I want cross-console platform play. It just has to be with the right kinds of things. And I don't know if we're really ready to move. Because basically what would happen with cross-console platform play is Microsoft would win because they already have PCs.
Yeah.
Like, they would just win. Like, they would just own all games if you really go that far into it.
Right.
Because the second that Sony doesn't have these dedicated platforms, there's really no need to buy Sony anymore. Microsoft can just focus on making really, really great hardware. And Sony would have to try and follow suit, but then it would just end up being more PCs, like, everywhere. And that's what Microsoft wants, and that's exactly why they're pushing to, in a way, pushing to do this.
Right. I don't know.
I'm all for...
I think,
I'm all for the gamer. Like, I'm all for it. I understand why Sony might not want to try it.
Right. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I agree. I agree completely because, I mean, this is Sony's bread and butter here. And, you know, if they need to have that because Microsoft, I mean, if Microsoft was smart, they would, like, strike a deal with Steam and just be like, let's just merge your Steam thing into our platform, get rid of our Windows Store, and then, or make them where they talk to each other, and then suddenly they've, like, taken over everything. And they'd have all of the PC market, they'd have all of the Xbox market, and Sony would be like, I don't know what to do here.
Yeah, but, and so, I mean, it's a huge part of their business. Last year, it made them more money than anything that they own, so.
Yeah.
I don't know. I hope that Rocket League at least makes that first step, if anything, but I don't think it'll be a step that's everywhere, always.
Yeah. Cool. Well, last thing I want to just throw out there and mention real quick, we have an Uncharted DLC coming out this year. It is the Lost Legacy featuring Chloe from the Uncharted series. And the Naughty Dog has come out and said that to say the Uncharted world is done, I quote, I doubt that highly. So there was rumors. We know that the Nathan Drake storyline is over. And then they've announced a Lost Legacy. It sounds like they're going to continue the Uncharted world going on in the future to showcase and highlight different characters that they feel are really important. Because they said they looked at including Cutter, and they looked at Sam, for example, and what he was doing during that time. And then
let's get a prequel with Sully.
Sully. Yeah, there we go. I was trying to think of his name. I couldn't remember his name. Yeah, Sully. Like, I mean, Sully was such a good character. And I mean, he, to me, is as interesting as Nathan Drake in a lot of ways. And I like to see what he does when he's younger, you know, like younger and more agile and stuff like that, what his life was like leading up to that point. So I just thought that was cool that Naughty Dog isn't throwing this series away yet. I mean, not that they would. I mean, they have such a great lineup of games that they've released thus far. But it'll be cool to kind of continue to stay in that world because they've developed such good characters with it, and just explore that over time and see what else comes out of it. So exciting stuff.
Yep.
Well, that concludes our news segment this week. If there's something that we missed or there's something you'd like to hear us talk about, please let us know at theinnergamer.net. And this week, our discussion topic, oh wait, hang on a minute. We have one more thing we got to mention. Devin.
Yeah.
You wrote an article last week.
Oh, yeah.
I want to talk about that real quick.
Yeah. I know we mentioned it briefly on the last cast, but I, after Sony's E3, I have been expressing some great hesitancies with the new God of War series, and I wrote about it in God of Here's Hoping.
I like that title.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I am very happy that we're back with Kratos and that it looks great. We've got a totally new dynamic with, you know, the setting and the atmosphere and the tone of the story. And we've got a new character in there, and there seems to be a lot more dialogue. I'm just curious if this is going to work with the God of War series. Not to mention, and this is just my own opinion, but I felt like the combat is going to not work from that over-the-shoulder third person.
So what was it before? Was it like behind the back, third person? Because it was third person before, right?
Yeah, it was third person, but it was much.
It was much wider.
It was much wider shots, and that's because there were so many more enemies. It was like all the hordes of people coming in, and I don't know. I don't want to say that I'm not excited, but there's just some things there that I don't know if they're going to translate well to the new title.
Huh. Yeah, I can understand the concern. I think it's just going to have to be an understanding that that's the direction it needs to go. More of like a, it's not going to be as fast, but it'll still feel good, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and maybe it's just more closer in and more slower because, you know, Kratos is older. But I mean, we'll see. I do suggest reading it though, because I was able to articulate my thoughts pretty well, I hope.
That was good. Yeah, head over to theinnergamer.net/read to check out that article.
So yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Thanks, man.
Awesome. Very cool. Well, we are going to take a break and come back with a very special guest interview with Carolina Ravassa.
Carolina Ravassa.
The voice of Sombra Ravassa from Overwatch. So
my best friend.
We're really pumped. Devin was not able to join us in this interview.
I was not.
But It's okay. Still very fun.
Still cool.
We don't talk about Overwatch as much as we talk about her and the things that she's been doing.
She's
because
blowing
she
up right now, man.
Super
she is
active
blowing it up.
In
yep.
the world of everything. And it's just, if you guys don't follow her on
she's
Instagram,
such a cool
check
person,
it out.
Man.
It's cool. So stay tuned. We'll be back with our conversation with Carolina. So
Carolina Rabasa.
Let's break.
Nice. Carolina Rabasa.
You're listening to The Inner Gamer.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Inner Gamer Podcast. We have a very special interview today. Today, we're going to have Carolina Rabasa on. She is the actress most known for the voice of Sombra in Overwatch. Carolina, welcome to the show.
Sombra online.
That's awesome.
Hi, how are you?
Love it. You can do that all day, and I'll just sit here and listen.
Phenomenal. Sombra online. Sombra online. I'm kidding.
That's great.
How's it going, guys? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're doing good. We're excited. We're back from E3 and excited to chat with you about all the good stuff that's been going on in your life, which sounds like a lot. So before we get into it, tell us a little bit about yourself. In your words, who are you? What do you do? Give us the pitch.
Oh my God, who am I? I am Carolina Rabasa. I guess I'll start from the beginning. I was born and raised in Colombia, the country, not Columbia, Canada or Columbia University. I grew up in Colombia, a little bit multicultural because I have an American grandma and a grandfather from Spain. So I grew up kind of half American, half Colombian, speaking English and Spanish. And, you know, my parents are awesome and liberal and pretty artistic. So I had a very artistic childhood. I have two sisters who are also artists. And I did a play when I was 5 years old, and I just fell in love with theater. I like to say that I was this hyperactive child. So they had me audition for a play, and I got it. And then, you know, it's like the acting bug hit me, and I haven't been able to stop. So I did a lot of theater growing up, you know, and then I decided I wanted to apply to college for theater, and that took me to Boston, where I went to Boston College for theater, which was a great experience because I hadn't ever really acted professionally. Not that college was professional, but, you know, I started getting some real training, you know, and since I was a kid, I always loved, you know, accents and languages, and so I would imitate my parents' friends, you know, who were German or French. And my dad did boarding school in Britain. So like, sometimes he talked like this, and I'd be like, oh, I'm going to imitate my dad, you know. So I kind of always loved, you know, accents. And then, you know, once I graduated college, I moved to New York to do acting for film and television at a conservatory. And then I stayed, you know, and since then I've just been auditioning for, you know, anything under the sun that's related to acting, which is film, TV, theater, commercials, voiceovers, you name it. So that's kind of been that kind of got me here. But the last, you know, 9 years I've been in New York pursuing acting professionally. So it's been up and down, you know, it's a hard career.
Yeah, definitely. Well, that's a lot you've done thus far. That's pretty awesome.
I tried to keep it concise.
Yeah, so you speak a lot of several languages, right? Because I know obviously you speak English and Spanish, but you speak a few others as well. Isn't that right?
Yes, I when I was 17, I did a summer in Italy and I learned Italian. You know, I think Spanish helped. So I was pretty fluent by the end of that summer, and I kept studying it in college. And then I'm obsessed with Brazil. So I did an exchange program with the college in Rio de Janeiro and learned Portuguese while I was living there, and did street theater with an awesome like socio-political theater company called Theater of the Oppressed. So that's where I kind of perfected my Portuguese. And that's helped, you know, that's actually the beginning of how I got into Max Payne 3. They needed Brazilian Portuguese speakers. And so I auditioned, and that's kind of how I got to start working with Rockstar Games, which was really cool. And you know, because I speak Portuguese and Italian, then I can do those accents in English just because I kind of feel like they go hand in hand. So it all just helps the acting pool, you know?
Yeah.
Do you ever have to like go back and like listen to some of these accents to kind of get it back, or is it just you just use them all the time?
Well, I think that the languages I speak, I can do those accents pretty easily just because they're kind of in me, I would say. You know, I learned to do a Scottish accent in college for the Scottish play, and I haven't practiced it in a while, so it probably sounds really weird. But there's some that I just have in my repertoire, like Russian or British or, you know, Latino, like, do you want your weekend or do you want sombra who talks like this? So I kind of feel like there's some that I use more often just because of what I look like. I can play Brazilian. I can play Latina. So I use those a little bit more at auditions and stuff, you know.
So what's your favorite language to speak?
Oh, my favorite?
Yeah.
You know, I think Portuguese is really fun because I like to think it's like a song. It just goes up and down. And, you know, você tá falando assim, muito bonito. And it's kind of just like this sing-song. But Italian is so romantic. I don't know. They each have their thing. And I like to pretend I speak French. So I just started doing like this, you know. And I was having Widowmaker teach me French. So I was like, excusez-moi, je ne comprends pas. Je suis sombre, you know. But I don't really speak French. I dabble.
Yes.
I can't choose. I like them all. Wait.
Yeah, Brett used to, yeah. He studied French in high school.
And oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Now it's just gone.
I spent 3 years studying French in high school and then didn't touch it after I graduated, and now it's lost. I can say Je m'appelle Brett, and that's about it.
Je m'appelle Brett. Well, yeah, if we don't practice, I definitely think we can lose languages. You know, it's a matter of practicing them.
So you also have a YouTube channel that you work on, Hispanglo-Saxon. Tell me a little bit about that, how that came to be.
Okay, well, yeah. In America, I realized that, you know, I was just considered Latina for acting, and I'd show up at auditions as a Latina, and they didn't believe I was Latina because I was too white. So because I'm a Hispanic and an Anglo-Saxon, I called myself a Hispanglo-Saxon. And I decided to, it was just one experience after the other got so frustrating and so sometimes painful and sad and angering that maybe I would do well at the audition, but they just wanted somebody darker, or they wanted someone with an afro, or they wanted, you know, a more Mexican looking, whatever that means.
An
you
afro?
Know? So, well, you know, like Puerto Rican or okay, Dominican,
okay.
You know,
okay. Yeah, I got you.
Sorry. Yeah, that's confusing. So I decided to, you know, do these kind of little vignettes of my experiences. And the only reason I decided to play all the characters was because I also got tired of asking my friends to help me. And then, you know, if they got jobs that paid, then, of course, we'd cancel the shoot. Or, you know, it's like when you don't have a budget, you can't pay your friends, and then you feel weird asking for favors. So I'm like, I'm just going to do this by myself. I'm going to shoot it with my iPhone, and I'm going to edit it on my basic iMovie and my very basic editing skills. And then I started putting on these wigs that I borrowed from friends. And I was like, oh my God, I love doing these characters. And, you know, I didn't think it was going to be sketch comedy per se. And then as I was editing, I realized, oh my God, there are so many funny moments here, you know? So I think it was just this really crazy kind of self-discovery process. And then I realized I love playing characters with accents, and I'm like, heck, I want to do more of this. So it's just been my passion project that I do when I can on my own schedule. And now I'm really excited that a lot of, you know, Sombra fans are watching the episodes.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, it's always good to have that kind of passion project outlet in your life, because, you know, no matter what you do in your day-to-day work and stuff like that, like having that outlet that's productive, you know, gives you an ability to learn new skills that you can't do at work necessarily, but allows you to learn new skills that could eventually lead into something down the line, you know, into a future job or something like that. So I think that's really cool that you have that.
And I think, like, even if nobody saw my web series, it just helped me realize that I love sketch comedy, and that maybe one day I'd love to audition for SNL. Like, I had never considered SNL as something that, you know, maybe I'd like to do. And now I'm like, wait a minute, that would be awesome, just because I realized I love wigs, you know? So, you know, I've discovered a lot about myself through this series, and it's kind of been really, really unique and special for me.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you end up on SNL, that would be so cool. I would love to see that.
Yes.
Crossing fingers one day.
One day. So you've been, you kind of been going through a journey, and it all started with Symetra. Can you tell us about your journey, like trying to meet all of your cast of Overwatch?
You know, that all happened kind of by mistake too. I went to BlizzCon, and then they had a wrap party for quite a few of the actors who could make it. And, you know, we met everybody there. That's the famous video that Lucio did with all of us. And,
yeah.
And then Symetra was like, oh, you know what? I lived in New York. I might go soon. Let's get coffee. And I'm like, sure. But I didn't think that I was ever going to be hanging out with Overwatch people, you know, and I didn't really know conventions were a thing. So I didn't think I'd be bumping into them there either. And then, you know, I hung out with Anjali and we were going to take a selfie, you know, for the fans. And we were like, oh, let's do a video. And well, what are we going to say in the video? And I said, I don't know. What's your line? And she goes, you were not meant for greatness. And I'm like, oh my God, what if I do it and you do mine? And and then we just, it's like a 30-second video, but you know, it went crazy. And then all of a sudden we're like, oh my God, let's do more of these. They're really fun, you know? And then it kind of turned into a thing. And when I realized Lucy Pohl lived here, I'm like, hello, we got to do a video. And then we tracked down Farrah, who lives here as well. And then I realized Chloe lived in France and I happened to be going to Paris. So it just kind of, it's all been rolling out in a fun way. But I wasn't thinking like, oh, this is my mission in life. I'm going to meet all the Overwatch actors. But it's been really, really fun to just do our voice lines and get to know these actors who are all phenomenal people, you know.
So you went to Paris recently.
I did.
And did you go there just to meet Widowmaker, or did you go on?
No, that's that's what I'm trying to say. I'm not on a mission to find them. Like, I'm not going to go seek out Anna in Egypt. But no, I was going on a trip with my sisters and my aunt and cousin, just like a family trip that we decided a while ago. And because I knew she lived there, I'm like, I am going to hack this lady. and that's how it came about. But I wasn't like on a mission to find, you know, Chloe.
This should be like a documentary or something. Like, I think that'd be cool.
Yeah,
it would. But you know what? It turned my trip into a more fun thing because then I started shooting little tiny scenes to go into that video with Chloe, where I'm like crawling in front of the, you know, the Eiffel Tower, and I was like, I am crazy, but I'm kind of loving it.
That's awesome.
How did the news report theme kind of come up? You've done a few of them where you're like,
yeah, I think it was. You know what it was? It was a fan tweeted about Jen Cohn, and he was like, hey, welcome Jen Cohn to Twitter. And I was like, wait, Jen. And I didn't know if it was the real Farrah, so I looked her up on IMDb. Like, I'm not going to, you know, tweet to her and share her to the Twitter world if it's not really Farrah. So I looked her up, and it was indeed. And then I was like, wait, you live in New York? And she was like, yeah. And so then, you know, everybody started liking her tweet and welcoming her to Twitter, even Michael Chu, who's the writer of Overwatch. And it was really funny because we're like, where have you been? Under a rock? And she's like, I guess so, you know? And so then with Lucy, we thought, you know, like, we have to do something like the unveiling of Farrah, because she had just kind of been MIA to the, you know, to the social media world. So we're like, oh, my God, we should do this like breaking news thing where we're like, you know, we tracked her down and we found her finally. And then because Lucy speaks a bunch of languages, too, I'm like, oh, let's make it like this international BBC thing where everybody all over the world's been looking for Farrah and we found her, you know. So that was kind of just a little idea I had, and we ended up recording all these different like languages for breaking news in Italian and in, you know, Portuguese. And I didn't know Lucy spoke Greek. I thought she was inventing a language, you know. So anyway, it was just, we're just being fun and creative, and I keep thinking up ideas for new videos. I'm twiddling my thumbs thinking about what I'm going to do with Matt Mercer the day I meet him.
That would be awesome.
Yeah,
that's really cool that putting those things out there and stuff, because
fans are eating it up.
Hey, it's fan service, continual fan service. And that's what I love about this Overwatch game, is that, you know, everybody's so attached to Overwatch, but they're so attached to the characters as well. And the fact that you guys, being the voice actors, are so open to, you know, everyone that is a fan of it, just makes that all more special for everybody else that's a part of this game. And just, I mean, the fact that it's a game, and here it's, I mean, people love these characters so much, and getting to meet the actual characters is super cool. So,
and like, well, go ahead. It's kind of like spurred all this. Like, I've seen videos of like someone animate you guys with your audio over
God,
it.
Oh my God, that's crazy.
Like, I've been kind of blown away, and all the pictures that you've been posting on Twitter and Instagram, like, how has that been? And then going to all these cons and like all this mesh of fandom.
I mean, I knew there was I knew that there was fan art, and I'm always excited to share really cute things. I am just amazed at the level of skill and talent and artistic endeavor that a lot of the fans have when they animate our stuff. I'm like, oh my God, you know? I think it's really fun. I love the animated, you know, little pictures of us eating the cupcakes and stuff. like that just came about randomly. Okay, let's eat cupcakes. What are we going to do? You know, I think we're all just zany and a little bit crazy. I really love the interaction with the fans because I think all sides, Blizzard, the voice actors and the fans, we all have great intentions. And, you know, Blizzard created these amazing characters. They're so inclusive. They're so diverse. I love that, you know, they represent the LGBT community and all races. And, you know, it's just, it's so wonderful in that sense. I love it. Even all ages. Like, I love that Anna's a little bit older. That's so beautiful. And I love that the fans love that. And most of the fans just express love. You know, I haven't received a lot of hate via fans, which also is great. So I think that it's just like, how could we not like the fan interaction? Because they're just giving us tons of love, you know? And at conventions, I'm amazed every time I get a gift from somebody or a poster they made, or they bring me chocolates, or, you know, like, it's just, I don't understand it. But it's really sweet. And I'm just grateful. I'm really grateful to receive all that love.
Yeah. So on the note of all, like, the fan art you've gotten, the different things that you were talking about, what is the most surprising or just like, wow, this is amazing that you've received from somebody?
Let's see. I think, one photographer, just incredible, Sean Flansbaum, he offered to send me some of his photographs framed, and he sent me his website, and I was like, are you kidding? And I'm going to hang them up soon, and they're gorgeous photographs, and they're beautifully printed. And so he sent those to my house, and that's why I sent his little daughter some signed prints, which I put up a video of that.
That's awesome. Yeah.
So that was great. But, you know, there was a girl who wrote to me, and she's Guatemalan, and she's on the spectrum. So she loves Sombra and Symmetra, and I love that she she sent me some fan art that she did and some little stickers, and she's just so grateful that she is represented, you know, in this game. And that's really moving because, it's incredible, you know? So I think there's different things that have touched me. You know, I get a lot of, like posters and fan art on my Instagram and stuff, and that's all great. But I just, when I hear these stories of people who just feel represented and like finally they're seeing their people up on screen and they get to play them, that's really special. That goes deeper than I ever expected, you know?
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So what kind of advice would you give a young aspiring actor who wants to get into, whether it be voice acting or just acting in general? What kind of tips would you give them?
Well, first of all, I think you have to absolutely love acting in order to go into this, because it's such a hard career to break into that if you don't absolutely love it and if it's not the number one thing you want to do, oh, don't waste your time, you know, because it's just more painful than fun. You know, definitely prepare to get some training, go to school for it or take classes and see if you really like it. And you know, you have to work your butt off. But besides the talent and the hard work, I think you have to remember to be patient. It's a career that doesn't always take off in, you know, overnight like some people think it does. I've worked my butt off for 10 years, you know. I waited tables, I babysat, I catered, I did so many jobs to pay my bills. And I think that it's a mix of hard work and perseverance and just sticking with it long enough to finally see the fruit of the seeds you've planted. You know, they don't just grow overnight. So it's a mix of things. You know, I think patience is huge and not taking things personally and just believing in yourself and having a thick skin to, you know, cause one audition that you don't book is going to, if that's going to break you, you better get prepared. I've auditioned for hundreds of things and not booked them. So,
right.
It's just sticking with it, you know, like any dream that you have, you gotta keep working at it.
So, do you have a moment in your career, that you were like, this is exactly why I'm doing this? And what was another moment where it was really, really hard, but it shaped you as an actor?
I think I've had different little moments where I'm like, this is why I'm doing this, you know? Like the first indie feature I did where I got to play one of the more main characters, and she was just like a cool character. you know, it was an indie film. I wasn't getting paid a lot, but I just loved every moment on set. And so when I finally got that project, it's a film called Maybe Tomorrow. I was like, this is why I do this, you know? And then when I got to do The Affair and I got to work opposite Dominic West, who's also McNulty, I'm just like, pinch me, please. I'm working with this amazing British movie star, and he's just so generous and such a wonderful actor to work opposite. So, you know, there's, and of course now Sombra, you know, like Sombra is huge for me. And I think she's opening a lot of doors, hopefully for other animated voices and, you know, just future projects. But so I think that there's little milestones that kind of shape you as an actor. I think one project that I really wanted this film was about a girl who loves salsa dancing, and I had just dreamed about it for years. And when the time came to audition, I sent a video, and I don't even think they saw it, and they cast some girl, and I felt like I didn't even get a fair chance at this project that I had been, you know, waiting for so long, and it really broke my heart. And I remember it was hard to deal with that, because something that you've spent so much time thinking about and feeling that you're preparing for, and then it doesn't happen, it's heartbreaking. But then somehow you understand that it wasn't meant to be, and it wasn't your project, and, you know, maybe you dodged a bullet in some way or another. So right. I think that it's just moving past all these moments and knowing that you're going to have other opportunities. So there's up and downs all the time. Trust me, still, you know, there's, I just auditioned for a TV show, and of course I didn't get it. So it's like, damn, you know, come on.
I'm Samra, motherfuckers.
Yeah.
That's crazy. But I mean, I get it. I mean, it's kudos for you and actors everywhere, because that is such a hard business and such a challenging, because like you were saying with the, Hispanic Saxon thing, where that came from, like, just the reasons for being rejected are to be so exactly. simple, yet I mean, you never even know, you may not even know why you were rejected. So like, I can't imagine, like, if you get turned down for a big role, like what that does to you. So you just have to be really strong to keep pushing forward and stuff. So yeah, that's cool. So with the traveling and everything like that, I want to dig a little deeper in that. You travel a lot. Do you have any pro tips of any kind for making the most out of your travel? So you mentioned going to Paris and how you met up with one of the voice actors there from Overwatch. What other kind of tips do you have for people that want to get in traveling and how to make the most out of that, especially if it's like a business trip or something like that?
Oh, I mean, I don't know about that. I think that every time I have a work trip, I try to extend it 1 or 2 days just so I get to see the city or, you know, get a feel for what's going on and enjoy a little bit of the work trip. When I was in college, I used to, you know, if I was traveling home and the flight was overbooked and I had no rush to get home, or if I'm never in a rush to get wherever I'm going and they offer a voucher, I always take it. I mean, you know, if it's $500 and up, because that's kind of what makes more sense for tickets, you know, I'll stay for the voucher, and then that's a future ticket to go somewhere else, you know?
Right.
So I'm usually pretty good at that kind of stuff because I just love traveling. So, you know, why not get some money towards more travel?
Oh, yeah.
I think that when I travel, I try and get a feel for neighborhoods and like cute coffee shops that you can hang out in and really feel the city more than just the touristy things, you know. Like, I don't know if everybody in New York City needs to go to the top of the Empire State Building. Sure, it's a beautiful view, but I almost feel like, you know, walk through the West Village and sit at a few coffee shops and enjoy that, you know, more than like the very, very touristy things. Sometimes, I guess it depends, you know.
Yeah.
Obviously, go to the Louvre. Please don't skip out on, you know, important things. But
got to see the Mona Lisa.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, pack light. I think that we always overpack. So I think that helps to just make it. I'm really good at just like keeping a light bag because we travel so much. It's just easier if we don't have to check a bag, you know.
Yeah.
But of course, you know, Australia, which is my next trip, and Canada, I'm going to need a bigger one just because I'm going to be gone for quite a few days. And now I have to travel with posters, you know, to sign for the band.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit heavier and a little more stuff to take. But I don't know if I have any pro tips. You know, I think it's just trying to get the most out of cities and enjoy the atmosphere.
Well, that's a good tip in itself. You know, just like, I mean, consider not just the touristy things, but looking at you know, the culture and go to an off-beam path kind of place. I think that's important to look into.
Well, and also, you know, try some really good local food. I feel like I've traveled with friends and they want to go to a McDonald's in India. And I'm like, are you kidding me? So, you know, there's levels of, like, definitely please try whatever, you know, that country has to offer in terms of food. I think that's the best experience. Eating the food is oh my God, amazing. Like when I was in Houston, you know, I had some ribs and brisket and all that good stuff. So.
Oh yeah. You gotta love that Texas barbecue.
You haven't had the for best. Sure. You gotta come to Dallas.
Yes. Yeah. You need to make that happen. There, That'd be awesome.
All right.
So what's the, not necessarily the best place you visited, but the most memorable place that you've gone to?
I mean, Brazil's in my top because I just felt like Rio was magic for me. I love Thailand. It's a great place to go backpacking and stay at really cheap, cute hotels, and the food's cheap as well. And I love waterfalls, so I went to this place called Kanchanaburi, and the waterfalls were incredible. And then I also went to Jordan once, and, you know, we did jeep tours in the desert and walked through all these, like, incredible, like, just the natural rock formations that they have. Petra is one of the most cool, beautiful places I've been. So I think I really like outdoorsy trips more than museums and stuff. So I would definitely say that.
That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, Jordan sounds so cool. Like just going out in the desert and exploring and stuff like that. Because I mean,
it's amazing.
Yeah, like I've been to Canada. I've been to Mexico. I've been in North America, but I haven't been over the ocean yet. And cannot wait. I know.
I love Spain.
Spain.
Yeah. You gotta get you. Ooh. Yeah,
gotta go to Spain.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Yeah, the food in Spain's amazing, too. Oh,
people are nice. The cities are nice. It's just nice.
Yeah, yeah.
Nice.
That's awesome.
Cool.
So this is a different question, but it's always interesting to ask because you never know what people are going to respond with. But what is one thing that you are really good at that few people know about?
I think now, well, not few people. I love salsa dancing and I think I'm good at it. So that's something, you know. You know what? I'm really good at making a killer brunch.
Really?
I love making breakfast food. I love making eggs of all sorts. And I make an awesome brunch spread. So
really?
You know.
So, yes. So what would a traditional brunch spread look like? Like,
well, I'm a total nerd. So my favorite is, you know, God, I sound like such a hipster. Sauteed kale, quinoa, you know, soft boiled eggs, you know, definitely some hot sauce. But I'm also really good at making, I don't make the arepas, but I buy arepas and I kind of do this whole, it's a Colombian thing, and put an egg on top and like arugula and olive oil and ham and cheese and all this stuff. Or I'm amazing at making omelets. I usually throw artichoke hearts in there and corn and tomatoes, toast with melted cheese on top. I don't know. There's just so many things to do with brunch, you know, it's like, it's the best meal.
Well, that's another reason I come to Dallas, because there's a lot of brunch places here. That's like the thing to do.
I don't get brunch.
It's so weird. Like people wake up.
I just
and
go straight
like,
for. I'm the weird guy. Like I like dessert, but I'll finish myself off at the main course. Is that weird?
Well, no. But I like savory brunch. I don't necessarily need pancakes and you know French bread, French toast. Okay. I need like eggs. Eggs are just the fruit of life.
They are. They're so good.
Yeah, I can contest to that.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm a huge brunch fan of every way. One of the things that's big here is chicken and waffles, which I don't necessarily go for because
it's amazing.
Of the fried chicken and stuff like that. Like I would go for the sauteed kale option more than the chicken and waffles, but the waffles itself would be awesome.
Yeah,
like,
Brett's a hipster. If you haven't picked it up yet, but Brett's a hipster. He's a total hipster.
Oh yeah.
I
have
that's
glasses
funny.
And a beard on. So I'm like,
right.
Not
right.
A beard
and
on.
Flat.
I have a beard.
Yeah, he has a beard on. He can just take it off when he wants.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a face warmer.
Exactly. Yeah.
South Park.
That's cool. So, what kind of projects can we expect from you in the future? I mean, like movie wise, voice acting wise, anything you can talk about, share with us?
I filmed a horror film in Cuba last year. And that they're editing that right now. They're sound mixing. So I hope it'll be out soon. I have no idea, but that's going to be fun. It's called Havana Darkness. I think it's going to be really scary.
Awesome.
I'm going to shoot a film in Italy in the fall, so that'll take a while to come out, but that's something I'm going to be doing. I just got an animation demo together for to do more animated voices, so I hope to start doing more of that. But, you know, I haven't booked a job yet. I'm just throwing that out there right now. And then there's a few projects that are still editing, films called El Gallo and St. Nicholas and Dopamine. And just like any indie film, they take a while to come out. So I don't know where they are right now, but as soon as they're out, I'll share it on my Twitter, you know?
Awesome.
But where are your next cons you're going to?
Next cons, I'm going to Australia. So that's Supernova, Sydney, and Perth. And I'm going to Autofest, which is Calgary. I am going to Comic-Con in Honolulu in July. I'm going to one in Arizona in August. Hopefully one in Kuwait at the end of August.
Wow.
And maybe one in Wales at the beginning of September.
Can we just like trade places for a couple months so I can like travel?
Doesn't it sound crazy? I've never had such a crazy schedule and I'm so excited for it. But this is the first time that I have just like, you know, months in advance, kind of a little bit more organized, because actors usually just deal day by day figuring out what's going on next, you know?
Yeah.
So this is exciting to kind of know what's happening for the next couple of months in my life.
That's awesome. Well, we'll wrap this up here and everything, but tell us where people can find you online.
Please check out my YouTube channel. It's called Hispanglo-Saxon. I put a lot of fun Overwatch related stuff there. So, you know, check those out. And then my web series, if you have some time, on Twitter, I'm Carolina Ravassa. I'm always, you know, posting fun stuff and I try and interact as much as I can with the fans. And Instagram, I'm always doing photo shoots. So I put up fun images. My Instagram is Ravassa, which is my last name. Yeah, that's that.
Awesome. We'll have those in the show notes as well. So everybody can go check it out and make
awesome,
sure.
Awesome.
Give Carolina a follow because she's pretty awesome. So
thank you
so much for taking the time out to talk with us, and like I said, go and check her out on online, and also stay tuned for after the break where we're going to wrap up the episode and send it off. So thank you again for coming on the show, and we look forward to seeing future projects from you.
Thank you so much. Apagando las luces.
You're listening to The Inner Gamer.
All right, everybody, we're back. That concludes our discussion topic this week. Thank you again, Carolina, for coming on to the podcast.
Gracias, Carolina Ravassa.
Thank you, Devin. That was awesome. It was very cool. If there's a topic you want to hear us talk about, or somebody that you think we should check out, or a game that we should check out, hit us up at theinnergamer.net and click the contact button, which will go straight to our emails, and we will reach out to you and probably get that person or thing discussed on the show.
Anyways.
Yeah. So that wraps up everything. Guys, what are you going to play next week? What have we got on the
next
docket?
Week, because I am officially ready to go ahead and hit the purchase button on all these Steam games, I'm going to, it's happening. More than likely, it's going to be Darkest Dungeon. I'm going to see what Dark Souls looks like on the PC. I will also be playing... I can't remember the other titles. Because I have a lot.
There's so many.
Player Unknown.
Yes.
So I'll get that as well.
Once you get that, you won't be playing anything else.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Because I hear Darkest Dungeon is something that's right up my alley.
Is Darkest Dungeon co-op? I mean, is it how? I forgot.
Well, you're
what
asking
that
is. Me like I've played it yet. I don't know.
I figured you would know because you want to get it, and you. I don't
no,
know.
No, all I've seen is art style.
Okay.
So
I think it is a co-op game. I want to play that too, but I want to see if it's something we can play together.
That'd be fun.
Because that'd be super cool.
And I'll probably still be playing Diablo 3 just because they also have the Necromancer pack coming.
Yeah. Yeah.
Raise skeletons from the dead.
I might have to get that again because that was a fun game. It was cool. I mean, I actually can play that, which is good.
Yeah, tell me of a Diablo game that's not fun.
Yeah, that's true. That's
I'll
true.
Give you time.
I used to play a lot of Diablo 1 with my buddy
back
at his
in
house.
The day.
It's good stuff. Louise, what are you going to play next week? Got anything on your list?
I might finally jump into Civ 6, but I'm scared because I don't want that to be the only game I play.
Yeah.
Which I have a feeling is going to be the case. But other than that, I'm probably going to start slowly buying stuff off of my Steam wish list. But for sure, PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds.
Nice, nice. Yeah, I got. I'm probably gonna start playing. I want to play the second episode of Guardians of the Galaxy that came out. I have a couple games that I've picked up that I'm not allowed to talk about yet, but we will talk about in the future. And then, probably more Battlegrounds. So that'd be fun. And maybe some arms. I might punch some people. So that'd be cool. But yeah, so be sure and check us out next Tuesday for more gaming goodness. We will also have another exciting interview on that I'm not going to tell you what it is, but if you guys like virtual reality and you like video games and you like just hearing really cool conversation about the future of gaming, that is one to check out.
VR.
You can visit theinnergamer.net for all of our latest podcasts, blogs, videos, and social channels. If you guys like what you hear, please leave us a review on iTunes or tell a friend.
We also have a Patreon, which is a way for you, our listeners, to donate to the cause in order to bring you all the great content you want to see in here. Plus, if you do support us, we have some awesome rewards waiting for you, such as being a guest on the podcast, getting exclusive content, or even joining us for a D&D session. So please head over to theinnergamer.net and click donate to contribute on our Patreon page.
My name is Brayton Oski.
I'm Devin Dury.
I'm Luis Gonzalez.
And you've been listening to
The Inner Gamer.
The Inner Gamer.
That was very...
Goodbye.
That was
goodbye.
My name is Slim Shady.
Okay.
Yeah.